And he was always willing to push us, which was, in the sense that push us beyond what we thought we could do, and that so that like as an example, Jack Kornfield, who's he's a lay teacher, a very well-known lay teacher in America. He went and went to live with Ajahn Chah. He went first as a lay person, and he's one of the few people who showed up to with an interest in studying with Ajahn Chah, who did have language skills. He'd been a Peace Corps volunteer in the northeast of Thailand, so he was comfortable, and he's quick with language. So it's his you get very good language training as a Peace Corps volunteer before you go out to the villages. And he was working pretty much on his own as a Westerner with public health crews in the northeast of Thailand, just north of where Ajahn Chah's monastery is, Sakornakorn for the Thai people. He showed up. He'd never seen Ajahn Chah before. He kept hearing of him. He'd actually met Ajahn Sumedho first before he... Ajahn Sumedho was kind of in a retreat situation in Sakornakorn province. Ajahn Sumedho at that point was looking to have some time away from Wat Bapong and be in a quiet place where he could focus on was completely on meditation. And of course, word sort of spreads really quickly, especially with a Westerner. And so then this Jack Kornfield was hearing, oh, there's a Westerner, a Western monk at this place. So he went and visited and then found out that, say, Ajahn Sumedho's teacher was Ajahn Chah. And he got interested and he went down and when I finish my stint as a Peace Corps volunteer, I want to take a period of time as a monk. And so he went to Ajahn Chah, explained his interest, and Ajahn Chah's response was, I hope you're not afraid of suffering. And Jack was, what? What do you mean? That wasn't part of his deal. And Ajahn Chah explained. He said, well, you see, there's two kinds of suffering. There's the kind of suffering that you run away from, and you're afraid of it. You run away from it, and it keeps following you. And there's the kind of suffering that you're willing to face, and that's what you learn from, and that's what your wisdom grows from. And so that if you're afraid of suffering, you're not going to grow in wisdom here. Ajahn Chah could be incredibly direct like that. And that was a signature quality of his teaching. I mean, there are many different ways that he dealt with people. It was never a cookie cutter kind of template. He was, you got the sense that he was extremely intuitive and responded to people differently. With me, it was when I very first went and paid respects. So as this young, newly ordained monk who didn't have a clue what he was doing, really, And he just kind of, I bowed three times, and then and he just kind of looked at me and said, "If you want to stay here, you have to stay at least 5 years." That was a bit too much. It got me pondering and thinking and questioning. What did I want? So that was what planted the seeds for me to go back and stay with him and commit to living with him. As I say, I ended up living with him through till he became ill. First became ill, and then helped looking after her. And at that point, it was right around that time that he asked me to take over as the abbot of Wat Nanachat. And so then, you know, I was pretty young. And that was my ninth year as a monk. So, but when it's Ajahn Chah asking you to do it, then there's not much room for negotiation. I could have said no, but then also he had just gone for treatment, and that was at that point he is having the operation on his brain and having a shunt put in to relieve pressure on his brain, and so then it was sort of okay, just suck it up and deal with it. Ajahn Chah's got enough on his plate right now. If he thinks I can do it, then I'll give it a shot. And thinking that, of course, Ajahn Chah is going to get better and he's going to be back leading. But you know, it was a slow decline after that, and so about after a year, then he really was. After about a year or so, he was quite bedridden and not able to communicate and speak.